For March the 1st, 2024, we talk about Nightingale, Pacific Drive, Home Safety Hotline, and much more. Welcome to Level 491. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm Moxie.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. We're back. We were just talking in the green room about how impossible it was to find non-depressing stories for the last segment. Shit's
for this end boss, Cole is going to share cat pictures.
And shit's rough. That's kind of how it worked last time with the video of Dottie jumping at the ceiling. She continued jumping at the ceiling in the hallway at different spots. So I don't know what she hears in the attic. Is the best I can gather.
There is an attic.
Yeah, it's not like a go up there and walk around attic. It's mostly just a space between the roof and the ceiling. It's possible.
Prime ghost real estate.
Yeah. Ghost or varmint. So yeah, that's what we're working with here. We skipped past weather and got right to cats. That's how rough it is.
I did appreciate her trying to enhance the home maintenance stream or whatever.
The home maintenance stream.
What was the game you play? It was like Home Maintenance Hotline or something.
Home Safety Hotline. Yeah. Oh yeah. No, they hang around when I stream. That's cool. And that might as well be my story for this week. I've got nothing here for the banter other than my face healed from the lasers, which is nice.
Damn, so, I just lost a bet.
Yeah.
I mean, have you checked? Do you now get a new perk, like resistance to lasers or something?
No, in fact, it makes me more sensitive to sun for a little bit. So whatever the opposite of a perk is. So
did they do a big like Twilight Zone style reveal from that one episode where the regular looking lady was the crazy looking one?
No, they just wiped all of the goo off of my face and then gave me an ice pack and sent me on my way. So
I feel like the fact that goo is part of the process is actually pretty like crazy sci-fi.
pregnant people when they use the ultrasound, there we go. It's just ultrasound gel. It's like insulation or whatever. That's it for me. Nothing else going on. Somebody save me. Moxie, what you been up to?
Not a heck of a lot. Had a I'm trying to think. Did I talk about the seed swap?
No.
Yeah. So had a there's a local organization that organizes seed swaps. That's kind of basically their thing is to try to like they're a seed library. So like you know, trying to prevent monoculture, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they have them, actual events like twice a year, something like that. And it's pretty cool. So I picked up some squash for my neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
And the local NPR was there giving out seeds for some sort of plant that like butterflies like.
Okay.
And then for myself, I got some wasabi seeds.
Nice.
Which supposedly grow here, which is interesting.
Yeah.
How involved is the process of getting from seed to like wasabi as we would think of it?
I mean, apparently wasabi is just straight up radishes.
Yeah.
So I think it's just blend.
Okay.
Although I have heard, we had a family friend that... this was horseradish, but I imagine the idea is the same. He did that, and it like ate the coating off of his blender.
So that's good wasabi.
Yeah, partially I just want it for revenge on like whatever animal tries to eat all of my crops this year is going to regret its life's choices.
Yeah.
I like this.
I was just looking here because I just wanted to see, because you're mentioning wasabi and horseradish, like a little like trivia fact that I know is that like a lot of what we call wasabi here in America is actually horseradish dyed green.
Mm-hmm. No,
yeah, man. Yeah, where you're getting imitation wasabi, which is my understanding. But also I looked and you know, it's one of those things where once you notice this, it's impossible not to notice it. Wasabi is just another, like literally just another form of the brassicae. So like the same family, basically the same plant as like broccoli and cauliflower.
Basically like, everything.
Yeah. Basically everything we eat is somehow under brassicae. You know what I mean? Yeah.
It was funny. I was actually reading the other day about like rice can be it bioaccumulates arsenic.
Yes.
So you sometimes have to be careful with it. And according to the Wikipedia article, they're like, the two plants that do that are rice and brassicae.
Oh, it's like, well, fortunately that's not the basis for almost everybody's diet.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
Also, I just looked it up. Ghost pepper seeds are $2.79 a pack, so you can make the most antagonistic garden in the world.
The most antagonistic garden over in England, they've got like a poison garden, which I'd love to visit that. Like, it is a garden of the most deadly plants that exist, you know.
Wow.
yeah
they actually keep it as their strategic reserve for when a British author runs out of plot lines for one of their detective novels. They can just fall back to like, got something from the poison garden.
Totally just took some cuttings. I didn't expect us to get this much plant material. Hey, Moxie, the organization that runs this event, are they taking notes?
I mean, I cannot confirm that they have not like abducted me or threatening to, feed me to man-eating plants or whatever.
Okay. Yeah. I just wanted to throw this out there, just in case you could pass this up. Seed Swap is a terrible name for that.
Thought about it, didn't say it. I don't know. That's maybe if it's, it could go funny. A sexy direction. And you can the same branding.
You know, horticulturist. You get a little good at getting dirty. Yeah.
More like horniculturist.
Mm. Wow. So my other favorite thing about the seed exchange. No, that's not that much better. is the demographics of who turns up there.
Okay.
Is basically just like 50-50, like elderly rednecks and queers.
Yeah. There's a Venn diagram between most demographics. Mm-hmm. That is funny. Yeah. Well, that sounds fun. But do pass that note up, please, if you can.
Yes, I will.
Yeah. Ben, how about you?
I got some board game stuff as usual. Okay. I played Wormspan this past week, which is only out for Kickstarters right now. It's going wide, I think, sometime at the end of March. This is like a spiritual sequel to Wingspan, which is like a pretty popular board game that's about birds, if anyone's played it here.
So now you're the victim?
It's Worm with a Y.
It is, yeah.
Yeah. That's okay.
Yeah. This one is like dragon themed, which seems odd on first blush, but the mechanics are like vastly improved. And it's like I don't mind Wingspan. I like it. Played it, showed it to people, whatnot. This version of it like blows it out of the water. And it's like so much more what is it, like authority over like what your strategy is going to be and like figuring it out, and so much better of an engine builder and like a reward system. Mm-hmm. And so I found out afterwards it's another female board game designer, and she consulted with the original designer of Wingspan like heavily. Mm. And they kind of more or less collaborated on it, it sounded like. And I think she's based in DC. Which I could not tell from the art style of the game. I was like, did they just try and make this for like boys or something instead of like weird dragon themed game? But no, it's really, really good. So I think everybody in my board game group, we kind of unanimously agree that we're going to play it again next time we meet up. So yeah, big praise for that game.
I have to interject as someone who consumes a lot of juvenile fiction right now because of my kids.
Yeah.
Dragons are like right up there with horses for little girls as well.
Oh.
Yeah.
All right. It's the dragon stories are copious.
Then I am out of touch, and I gladly admit it.
Or you're just in touch with your feminine side.
Oh. Okay.
I mean, you know, dragons, I would also make an assumption about that, because dragons have a decidedly more aggro energy, but also, you know, girl dragon literature has been, it's not necessarily a new thing. It's new to me that it's ascendant right now, but it's not out of the realm of possibility.
One of the features of the game is all the dragons have like a subtype to it. So there's like aggressive, shy, helpful, that type of thing. So
you're describing My Little Pony.
<Uh-oh>. I need to put this onto my sister's radar, because she likes, her and her boyfriend love Wingspan.
Mm-hmm.
I just did a Google search to like pull up information on that, and stumbled upon apparently one of the big Wingspan like learn to play and like fan group stuff like that is called Wingsplain,
but
which is an amazing name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
pretty good.
Nice. Dennis,
I'm
how about you?
Still kind of disappointed it's not about like earthworms, though.
I thought it could go either way, actually. But you know, also cool. I'll take worms or dragons.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Dennis, how about you?
I'm doing good. This weekend I got to go and see Bit Brigade play.
Oh yeah. Have you seen this before, or was it Moxie was talking about them? Yeah.
I went last year to the same show, same place, but it's a different soundtrack they went through.
Mm-hmm. Okay. This is the folks who play along to, I know them. They were, it's a live band that plays while somebody does like Mega Man mm-hmm. speed runs. What did they play this time?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Crazy. So that basically the speed runner is considered like a band member,
mm-hmm.
and speed runs it live.
I also saw them do DuckTales. DuckTales was a good one to watch.
DuckTales was so good. So that was my first one, was Mega Man and DuckTales.
Mm-hmm.
This year it was Castlevania and The Legend of Zelda.
Holy shit. Ooh.
Yeah. So big names, and that drew a gigantic crowd. I don't think the venue was prepared for how many people came out. So I got there early, cause I had gotten tickets for a bunch of friends and was like, wanted to meet people at the door. But then this line formed like through the parking lot, out to the street, down the street, and they had like literally one dude checking IDs, putting on wristbands, and doing like transactions for walk-ups.
Yeah,
that everyone had to go through.
What venue was this? This is for nobody except for us.
I know. It's an awesome venue. Southgate House Revival.
Oh yeah, yeah, I love that place. Oh shit, they would not be ready for that. Were they in the ballroom, or were they in the, not in the ballroom? Sorry,
the big stage.
They were in the big one. They weren't back by the bar. Okay, yeah. Southgate House Revival is nice. As much as I like the original Southgate House, there was apparently like management problems there. Yeah.
Oh no. Yeah. I don't know the history, but the convention of a concert hall set in an old church, mm-hmm. with the stained glass still behind the people playing is pretty rad.
Nice.
Which, you know, a live Castlevania speedrun with a live soundtrack played in a church turned concert venue. Is it metal?
Oh, yeah, it's pretty good. Yeah.
But so when I went in, There were like a couple rows of seats on the side, and in the middle of the room had maybe six tables, each with four chairs at it.
Oh.
And I kind of looked at it and turned my head and went out and looked at the line again. And eventually what happened, like, people at first started trying to, like, for standing room, stand behind the tables, because there were people sitting at the tables.
Yeah.
And then at a certain point, it just it hit a critical mass, and people were like, this is stupid, and just walked up to the stage in front of the tables. and everyone filled in real quickly after that. So I don't know if they ever actually physically moved the tables, but it became basically an entirely standing room only.
It became venue. Untenable. Yeah.
Yeah.
They got to stand on the tables and still get the view.
That's great for them. I mean, in terms of, like, that's a decently sized venue for what seems to be a kind of niche attraction. Yeah.
Niche as hell. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, awesome. they brought it. You don't think about it when you're listening to just the chiptunes, but, like, since it's all composed on a computer, there's no consideration to how fast or disparate the notes are flying, right? It's just what sounds good, and the computer will take care of it. And so to have someone shred that live for 40 minutes while someone speedruns Zelda or what have you is just incredible to witness.
Yeah.
I just imagine it, someone sequence breaking and all of the musicians just frantically flipping through their music.
Well, yeah. The Mega Man speedrun is, Mega Man 2 specifically, is real fun because, you know, he's doing the speedrun or whatever, mm-hmm. but then it goes back to the, you know, they've got to play the victory fanfare that dun 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 dun, and then the level select kind of becomes its own, like, little, like, interlude to that too. Yeah.
Really nice palate cleanser.
Yeah.
And Zelda had a bit of the same thing. Whenever they got to a Triforce, they had to play that to celebrate, and people went wild every time.
Yeah.
Let's see. Castlevania had some cool stuff in it, speedrunning wise, in terms of the speedrunner, like, jumping and taking damage from a bat midair, because that gives you a little kind of double jump ish.
Yeah.
To get through places faster. In Zelda, there was a little trick he did where, I guess, if you, like, turn an attack away from a block in some of the temples, it'll kind of push you through the block.
Mm-hmm.
So he did that on occasion. But otherwise, I mean, otherwise the Zelda run was kind of surprisingly clean.
Oh yeah. Like, not a lot of like exploit kind of
cheesing
stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The guy just knew the game backwards and forwards and tore it apart.
If you're doing it, as a, like, a concert performance, doing a fully glitched, like, I turn around three times and then I'm at the credits would be
song.
Like, not necessarily out of the spirit of the endeavor, but unsatisfying if you paid for a ticket.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, which Zelda game was this?
The original.
Oh, the first one. Nice.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So ton of fun. You know, great crowd for it. And watching that happen live as performance art is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you're making me miss the Southgate House revival, so we're just gonna have to soldier on through that, I guess.
If you want to make a pilgrimage, I got a place for you to stay.
I know you do. Yeah. I'm overdue for a visit down there, so we'll talk. I think that's banter. So I think we got to talk about games now by doing a regular show, what with the grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss. And why don't we get started with
The Grind,
where we talk about the games we've been playing over the past period of time or so. Who has something new?
I have you if no one else does.
I have something new.
Okay.
But I'm curious what...
Dennis, go.
Okay. Yes. I have jumped in on the early access for Nightingale.
Oh, that looks amazing.
It is, yes. Looks amazing, and so far has been amazing. This is a survival game. Think Valheim, but instead of Viking-themed, it is Fae-themed. Which really is just an excuse for them to have the coolest fucking visual design I have ever seen. And just every step in this game is dripping with personality and quirks and... really, you know, it feels like fantastic things to see as you kind of do the standard gather resources so you can make nicer tools to gather better resources that make even nicer to you.
Yeah, therein lies the rub. Yeah.
Yeah. Nightingale does have some twist on it. So the conceit of the game is that, you know, the Fae have, you know, taught humanity magic a long time ago and thus allowed humans to realm walk and connect different realms through portals. And kind of that set forth a new age of innovation and expansion and exploration for humans. But there's some kind of pall or fog or, you know.
I was about to say, I bet the humans fuck it up.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's not explicitly them yet. But something originating from the human realm kind of starts taking over. And, you know, basically the portal network that humans have relied on, long since the Fae have kind of retreated from contact with the humans, starts to collapse, and you are trapped, set apart from the major human city of Nightingale, and you're trying to find your way back there. Meanwhile, Puck, or he also goes by Robin, or he goes by another name that I can't remember. It's all very whimsical, but this character, this Fae character, starts interacting with you and leading you, being like, hey, I'm going to help you get back in contact with Nightingale. His motivation's not entirely clear yet, but it's kind of a satyr character, except he's got a mask instead of being able to read his face.
Okay.
So just that touch of creepy that Faye kind of has. And man, Puck is so incredibly well written and voice acted. He functions essentially as a tutorial. And you know, at first he's kind of holding your hand through everything. And then he's like, I'm going to go search for something, you do this, and, you know, shows up at increasingly wide intervals. But just everything he says has these little, alliterations or little puns inserted or just kind of clever phrasing. Like it feels very, very Fae. I don't know another way to say it.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's just like, I'm excited when I see him. Not because it means some new mechanic is getting unlocked or a new objective has been achieved, but because I get to hear more of his dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
So full credit to whoever wrote Puck. The other cool thing that the game does is you can at any time go into your build menu and place kind of ghost blocks for whatever you want. And you can build an entire complex without having the material for it. You can kind of plan it out in 3D space. And then as you go and gather materials, you just come back to that kind of,
blueprint,
ghostly version.
Yeah. What's that?
Yeah. Like a blueprint.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Like a blueprint and just add, but you don't have to add resources to the specific blocks. Once it's placed, as long as it's connected to a larger complex,
right, it
all kind of goes into the same pool. And so you get to do kind of the imagineering and the planning out without the restrictions of resources.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you still got to go and get the resources, but adding them is as painless as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And it's clear they really leaned into the idea of, like, we want people to go beyond just functional.
Mm-hmm.
With their plans and like make whimsical stuff.
Yeah.
They don't have like gravity and stress in the architecture or
no, they do not.
All right, sweet.
That's a good way to get out of modeling gravity and stress.
Yeah. Yep.
but magic, bitches.
But also it's hard to name. I mean, like the forest has a little bit of that, but stuff still sticks together like glue. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the world that you're in is incredibly interesting because in addition to like, having resources to collect, et cetera, like there's that treadmill in there because it is after all a survival game, but every creature in this world is so strange and intriguing. And like, you know, I popped into a desert realm and there was a caravan of, it essentially looked like floating clocks traveling across the sands, single file in front of me. And I could kind of like see where they came from. And, Puck said something about like, don't disturb them right now or whatever. But just like to see this like weird creature, robot, I don't know, floating clock, wandering around the world or going into a forest world and looking across a lake and seeing this like giant ghost stag on the other side.
No.
And being like, well, I am not ready to deal with whatever that is, you know. But it looks really cool.
So can you do like an evil run and just be like, yep, I'm going to strip mine this place?
I imagine you could. As far as I can tell, like the resources are not super, what's the word for it? Like permanence, like, you know, so let's say you walk through a field and you pick the grass in the field. If you come back through in a couple minutes, more grass is going to have spawned. Or like if you mine the rocks around a rocky area, walk back through it after you've dropped them off and you'll be able to find more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see.
So it seems less concerned with kind of a zero sum ecosystem and more with the vibes, I would say. But it does seem to direct you, like, as you make better gear, you get access to, I forget what it calls it, but they're essentially dungeons within the world, right? Where you kind of go into a place that's more combat oriented, and you get the cards to be able to open up new realms. And so just as you're doing kind of the material collection treadmill, there is also a realm access thing. So depending on what cards you play at a realm portal, it will open up different types of worlds or biomes or even like weather patterns or types of resources that will be in the world.
Yeah, and so yeah, and those will be that sounds weirdly like a Minecraft mod that I really liked, like way back in the day, called Mistcraft. Where you by using different it was like Mist, you had special books, and by using different Dani symbols in like writing them, it would link to like different worlds that were basically just like completely implausible by the normal world generation rules. And you could like you could link between them.
And that is the vibe that I get. Having not been able to explore realms too much, but my favorite story from my experience so far is I spawned into a swamp world, and off in the distance, there was just this towering structure of metal girders, like someone had put in place the framework for a skyscraper, but not ever like filled it out. And so naturally curious, I go to it and find. Not only can I climb it, there's a network of stairs, but it also has these several places where like balloons made of heavy canvas are kind of floating, almost like parked around this structure, like it's almost like a magical flying device parking garage or something. But I see on one of these kind of mini airships, there's a chest, and I'm like, ooh, I gotta check that out. So I hop down and I open it up, and there's some cool magical items in there. You can infuse your items with magic rather than use magic directly.
Mm-hmm.
So anytime you cast a spell or do what have you, it's connected to an item that you've crafted. But then I turn around and realize, oh, I am hundreds of feet up in the air.
Yeah,
and jumped down onto this airship, and have no way to get back to the structure.
Going down's easy.
going down's real easy. But I had not yet experienced anything about the fall damage with this game, what have you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, maybe I could jump girder to girder on the way down. I don't know. I had my umbrella out because it was raining, and decided to just try it and jump. And y'all, my umbrella Mary Poppins style. Caught me partway down and let me float peacefully to the bottom.
Hey, you took a gamble.
I did, and it paid off. So yes.
So I have to ask: are any of the like armors, character designs, or anything like that particularly noteworthy? By which I mean, approximately how many cosplayers am I going to see at Dragon Con?
Yeah, in I could see a ton of people doing Puck. Because that looks cool as hell and would be fairly easy to replicate. It's all very Victorian, you know, but they've got muskets and revolvers and such. I don't know that there are twists beyond that would warrant cosplay. And because there's not at least that I've encountered yet, like main character that people would recognize versus just kind of the style of the game. I don't know how much you'll see. But yeah, it is very cool vibes. Everyone is dressed to the nines.
How dangerous is this world outside of like environmental concerns? Like you mentioned these creatures, are they hostile? Are you needing to kind of engage them in combat to like hunt them and get, you know, take their outsides to do to do crafting with them?
Or insides.
Okay.
Both outsides and the insides, in fact. So they're I've encountered a couple of creatures. One was kind of like a hippo looking kind of creature that was very territorial, and actually that was my first death. That's another great story. Is I get killed by this hippo and I get brought back by Puck, and he's like, apologies, I've paid a zephyr to intercept your soul and bring it back here so we can continue our work. However, the zephyr is very literal about their contract and refuses to rescue anything except yourself, so you shall have to manually retrieve your items.
Gotcha. Yeah. they justify the loot drop in fiction.
Yeah, yeah. By a overly legalistic zephyr. Mm-hmm. there's like hippos, there are these giant water buffalo I've seen, and then the predator that I've encountered is almost like a velociraptor type of creature. Not exactly, like everything kind of has this whimsical one step off kind of twist to it. But they are surprisingly good at being surprising. Mm-hmm. there's got to be some kind of flanking AI or the game cheats, I don't know. But you know, the amount of times I hear the screech and turn left just in time to see one rushing me is pretty high. Mm-hmm. But they're easily dealt with, and I died more to the territorial omnivore than I have to the velociraptors.
Okay.
Yeah.
How is your base like in the world, or is it kind of like separate from like the places that you go into and fight?
So essentially, after the tutorial, you choose effectively a home realm.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the realm I'm in so far, that you will return to and connect other realms to.
Okay.
And so the idea is that you kind of build your base in this safer realm.
Mm-hmm.
But that, you know, as you venture out to find more and more rare materials, the other realms will get progressively more dangerous.
Okay.
The predators are in your home realm, so it's not completely safe. And you obviously have to manage, you know, your hunger, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But when you find an area that you want your base to be established in, mine was in this kind of fen where on one side was this gigantic, it looked like under construction automaton that I think is going to be a dungeon I'm eventually able to go in. And then on the other side, there is a statue of an angel next to a 2-story high mushroom.
Okay.
And I was like, this feels like home. But so you put down kind of this this marker that then in a certain radius around it, I guess enemies won't spawn. Mm-hmm. They can definitely chase you into it, but it provides a little extra measure of safety in the world.
Yeah. Hmm. Gotcha. So they stay out of it, though, if you run back to your home base then?
No, the animals will absolutely come right into it. They just won't spawn. And I think,
okay,
like there's a day and night cycle, and I think Minecraft style, it gets a little extra dangerous at night.
Okay.
There's creatures called the Bound, which come out of this mist that that show up at night, and I think those are the main things that the ward deals with.
What is multiplayer like? Have you played with other people?
Well, they've been in a little bit of hot water for this because it was always online to start. They are promising to fix that as fast as possible. It does seem to be designed with playing in a squad in mind. The idea being that you connect all these realms and you're kind of venturing through them with friends. However, I've been in exclusively single player, and I think until I really had my footing in the game, and wanted to do like effectively raiding, that I wouldn't be interested in that. So,
and the fact community that it's, has
been, oh, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. And the fact that it's different realms, I think would make it easier to like hook up with other people and what they're making too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's The game is designed with multiplayer in mind. They went a little overboard and made it always online, and they're walking that back right now.
Okay.
And we'll see where that goes.
Yeah.
But yeah, amazing vibes in this game. I really like this kind of dark fae setting.
Do you know if there's a release date for the game out yet? I know it's in early access right now.
No, early access was like their big milestone. I've been, you know, this has been on my radar for a while, and all their focus has been on working towards early access. Yeah. I don't think they have a stated date that they want to full launch by. I feel like that's kind of the way of things now, right?
Especially for a survival game. This is going to be in early access for a while.
Yeah. Agree.
Yeah, I feel like developers really need to start telling, like, I know, at least informally, like, this is the point when you can start playing if you want a full game, even though it's early access.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there needs to be like a differentiation between early access. This isn't complete. It's basically like tell me when this is feature complete. Right. Something like that.
Yeah.
But it also defeats it would defeat the purpose a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think the idea that they're tinkering and adding things is like to the early access player, that is fun to be a part of.
Yeah, yeah. And for a survival game, that is less off-putting than if it was a narrative game that was early access or whatever, right?
Yes. Mm. Yes.
Yeah. To me, that's my
Oh, sure. Yeah. So that's Nightingale.
Triple A Valheim with a fae theme instead of a Viking theme.
Yeah. You know me, I'm all about the fae themes. So
I'm going to say Triple A in the sense that the graphics look good.
Yeah. Okay.
It is a beautiful game.
I was going to say I've never heard of this, and then I checked. This is their only game. So
I think it's like somebody used to work at a bigger company, but I forget which one.
Yeah, no, they have a pedigree.
I mean, there's a lot of them now.
Yeah. Spoiler for End Boss or
no? Yeah, Inflection Games. And you're right. This is the only thing under that name. Mm-hmm. I'll sit bolt upright at 2 a.m. tonight and shout out, you know, what they're known for or where they come from. But I know they do have a pedigree. So
yeah.
To be trusted with this, at least so far.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that's Nightingale. I have also been playing Helldivers 2.
Yeah.
Continuing with that. And I imagine, this will be a good segue handoff point. They have finally gotten the servers working.
Woo-hoo! Yeah. Apparently, they've gotten it to the point where they can actually get out of emergency mode and start continuing with their content plan.
Yes. Yes. And man, that is sweet. Being able to jump in and not have to wait around, being able to, you know, jump into matches and have things connect the way they should.
Yeah.
Just, you know, it feels so good, especially when it was so bad before.
Now that there's not a way, like, we should arrange something to play together.
That would
be great.
Yeah.
I've got a question. Did you see all of the people who, after it became a huge meme that the automatons, like, oh my god, this is just such a they're impossible, what is this? It took the community forever to realize, oh, you need the armor piercing bullets to fight them.
You kind of find the loadout that works for the different stuff.
Like, that's kind of on the developers though, because the game definitely tracks you into, like, you should be fighting the automatons, and I've been playing for a very long time, and I'm not particularly close to unlocking armor-piercing bullets.
Gotcha, yeah.
Yeah, and the fact that you can, people might not know this, but if you hold down the reload button, it pulls up a whole menu for whatever gun you have equipped, where you can manage like rate of fire, whether or not the flashlight is on, like all these little details about your weapon. You can really, it's kind of funny. Like, this is mostly a very slapstick arcade shooter, but there are these little milsim touches that kind of come out of nowhere. It's really interesting.
the fact that it's one of what, only two games I've played at least that uses magazine reload.
Yeah. Yes.
That is one of my favorite details because it goes against every little bit of my muscle memory. The mm-hmm. only other game mm-hmm. that I've played that does magazine reloads, and we'll define that, like all of them have been VR. The act of reloading is something very deliberate and very like worried over. So magazine reload means, okay, you can reload, but all of the bullets that were in that clip or that magazine that you just dropped, those are gone mm-hmm. now. That's yes. on the floor. So it's not like I shot, you know, I shot five bullets out of my 10 bullet magazine and then I reloaded and then it just filled in the top five. Here it plays with the limited resources and is specifically trying to goad you out of reloading every time you kill an enemy, which is my yes. muscle memory. That's what I do, and making it so you reload at the very last minute, pushing you into all these very dramatic situations where you have to reload in the middle of fighting something.
It's so good. And not only that, but many of these weapons, particularly like the machine gun and the stalwart and some others, are very much designed to be just like hold down that fire button.
Mm-hmm. So you can't even count. Yeah,
exactly. Where it's just like I'm pointing this at the enemy until it starts clicking. And like, you know, 3/4 of the way through your magazine, though, your soldier will start laughing if you fire a full clip that way.
Of course.
Completely manic. Amazing stuff.
There's also plays some into the loadout selection because, like, I actually somewhat preferentially use weapons that reload one shell at a time because then that obviates that issue.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yep.
Or likewise, there's some of the energy weapons have unlimited ammo as long as they don't overheat. Mm-hmm. And then your ammo is actually just replacing the heat sink. Mm-hmm. So, like, as long as you don't fire too much, you have unlimited ammo. But if you break it, then you have ammo.
Right.
Yeah, and it's a shame that right now... So I have kind of climbed up through the ranks of difficulty to the first level where you can get the super samples, which is like the rarest resource. So I think it's Suicide Mission is the difficulty. It's all got funky names.
Yeah.
But as you encounter like the elite enemies with more frequency, it feels like you are backed into using like the railgun, the marksman rifle, the grenade launcher. And it's like one of those three feels almost necessary.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's all these cool things. And there's even things like the energy weapons, like the laser beam rifle. If you're on a snow planet, it heats up slower. Like super cool.
Yeah.
And I would love to customize my loadout looking at that stuff. But there's a whole bunch of weapons that just can't cut. It can't cut it. Right now, it feels like. So
have you been
hopefully they balance.
Have you been kicked out of a match for not playing to the meta yet?
No, I see people complaining about that. I thankfully have not experienced it. Times I've dropped from a match, it's felt more like connection issues rather than getting kicked.
What is the meta?
Have you ever gone?
Yeah, what a Ben question. it's it is the breaker shotgun for your primary, the railgun for your special, and shield pack on your backpack.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then I think you gotta have the orbital laser, the 500 eagle strike, which is just the biggest bomb. Yeah, the biggest bomb that your air support can carry, and then. Yeah, your primary, the railgun takes up a slot in your stratagems, so that's everything. So
the one weapon I think right now that I'm disappointed there doesn't seem to be something in the game equivalent to is I would like to run for my secondary like a scoped revolver or something.
Sure, yeah.
Because, like, I generally use a very close-range primary weapon, so I'd love to have a weapon that would let me do, you know, kind of be like a sniper, but sort of a janky sniper.
Yeah, like you're going to take out one person with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that... And you know, I've had some success. Like, I'll run the incendiary breaker when I'm doing bug missions. And I like the marksman rifle, which I mentioned, which is, it's like, you know, it's still one of the better, quote unquote, you know, more better community accepted weapons, but it's definitely worse in strict terms than the railgun.
Yeah. So my big issue with the difficulty is you have to beat a previous difficulty to get the next difficulty. Mm-hmm. But the problem is, like, one drop, one mission is not considered a mission. So, like, when you select a mission, it'll be, you know, it starts out as two objectives, which are two completely separate matches.
Mm-hmm.
And then right now I'm up at three. And
yes.
So it's the thing where, like, I have definitely completed three matches, but I generally don't have time for, like, an hour and a half game session.
Yeah.
Oh, I've got good news for you. If you leave in the middle of a campaign, you have to be hosting it. But if you leave in the middle of a campaign and come back, it will save your progress in that campaign.
Okay, so I have to see that. I generally don't host, just because,
Whatever. I will only host because I've had too many times where I've spent 40 minutes, and the game drops at evac.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, not to mention people are have reported getting kicked at evac. Apparently because it's not as clearly communicated as it should be that all resources are shared between teammates.
Yeah, so that's not, another thing getting, that I saw was people team killing in order to try and get some kind of advantage. Yeah,
right. Which get, like, doesn't actually work, but right. Have you ever hot dropped into a I forget what it's called, like an enemies of present location?
No, I've generally tried to avoid it. I've definitely accidentally landed next to enemies on occasion, and that's harrowing.
Oh, it's pretty funny. We had a match. We did ultimately win it. But yeah, we dropped in, our initial drop location was just in the middle of like a huge thing of enemies. And so we instantly died like between 5 and 10 times.
Oh, no.
So it was just, like, the ship was just feeding drop pods to whoever was there.
Yeah.
Yep.
Drop pod was the MVP or the MVP weapon.
Yep.
Sounds more like the appetizer.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, again, as we've said before, is completely on point with, like, the tone of the game.
Yeah.
And something I love is that the community, at least so far, stays completely in character.
Oh, yeah.
In the forums and on Reddit and all this stuff. Like, people go out of their way to be in this Starship Troopers-esque persona.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is really fun.
I haven't seen it. Apparently, there's a... I don't know if you'd call it a podcast or a stream that is like, kind of a fake, like, radio broadcast from Super Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's just like, hey, what's in the store today? But it is all very in character.
Yeah.
But at the higher difficulties, it's really interesting because you go from trying to clear as much of the map as possible to just like, all right. what can I get away with?
Right. That's interesting. I've actually had the other experience. Like, as I got higher in difficulty, it's become much more important that, like, before we try any objectives, we're going to wipe out all of the spawn points.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. I hadn't thought about it from that angle. Just because, like, especially against the automatons, the drop ships seem to play such a significant role in bringing in forces.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can see that.
That it's like, look, if there aren't any drop ships in the sky, we need to get stuff done before there are, because once bots start getting dropped in, we're just you know, it's all about just surviving.
Yeah. I was going to ask if the bots also popped out of holes in the ground, because that would be funny, but also a little bit disappointing.
Yeah.
No, but amazing. If you get lucky enough in timing an orbital strike, or if you have an autocannon that happens to be looking the right way from the very beginning, you can shoot dropships out of the sky.
Oh yeah. Or if you have one of the like rocket launchers.
Oh really? Okay. I haven't tried that.
Yeah. That's awesome. Like the primary thing. Yeah. They will definitely drop those.
Yeah.
And you can also, dropships only come in if a enemy fires a flare, and so if you kill the enemies before they can do that, which is not easy but is possible.
I was gonna say, I'm learning that Moxie is better at this game than I am.
Oh no, no. I what I've found is funny is I usually have very few kills but have like I was the one who took out most of the objectives.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I rely very heavily on airstrikes.
Yeah. Using your utility player.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, ultimately, you know, you don't even have to survive. As long as the objectives get done, that's what counts.
what does surviving mean when you're literally just throwing dudes?
Like, that's my one big wish for in this game, is that every soldier would get named a la XCOM. Just like an automatic random name generation.
Yeah. They have different appearances and different voices and stuff. Which isn't, yeah, I think a name generator would be fun. So you could shout the name, you know?
Yes.
Darren!
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, right now, ostensibly, like, you are a character, although it would be much more on brand to, have them do that. Or at least, I can't tell if there's supposed to be the implication that you have clones.
There's people definitely being brought out of hypersleep.
A vending machine?
Basically, yeah. The one thing that goes against that is that you can just leave it random for what voice they have. Yep. But if someone's like picked a favorite voice, I could see that being supported.
Yeah, I mean, good. Like I said, not that this is a game where that is much more serious than anything in the game, so.
Yeah.
Sure, yeah. Man, what else to say about Helldivers? It's freaking good.
Yeah.
That's good to hear that the servers got fixed. That makes me a lot more likely to play it now.
Yes, yeah. I'm curious, you know, once you get through unlocking all the stratagems and the ship upgrades, which admittedly there's still a long road to hoe on that, but you know, what the end game will look like, or how much the kind of metagame galactic war stuff will carry it.
Yeah.
So that's where you just got to have trust in the game masters that they have and you know, their, what they've done in the original Helldivers to say like, yeah, they'll keep interesting stuff coming at you.
Mm-hmm. So the thing I've noticed is the battle pass is how you unlock weapons.
Yes.
Which implies that rather than like, you know, be a, you know, very overt meta, they're going to try to just, you know, keep adding random shit.
Yeah. Of note, and I did not know this until today, the battle pass does not expire. There's no timer on it. You will, you know, you'll have it as long as you want, as long as it takes to unlock everything.
Oh, which that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not an assumption I would ever make when I see a battle pass, but they're doing it right.
And the other thing is apparently in Helldivers 1, it was possible for like the war to get pushed back so much that you would actually be fighting on Super Earth.
Mm.
And like it switches to like an urban, like wrecked urban biome. Also, apparently it's possible in Helldivers 1, if you fail, Super Earth gets blown up. And they're like, oh, guess we'll have to build another one.
Yeah, the implication of we're just colonizing these new Super Earths around the galaxy.
Yeah. It's hard to think. Can anybody think of another example of a game where the second one made so much more of a wave than the first one like this? Like, I recognized Helldivers mostly because it was like it would show up on PSN, with some frequency. But I never really heard anyone talk about it aside from saying like, "Oh, this is the new game by the Magicka people," and then that was pretty much it. And then it's just wild that out of that they managed to grab something that completely dominated a conversation like this.
I'd say Uncharted was similar, maybe, where the first one like came out. I don't think many people talked about the first game. It was kind of like so-so, but I think the second one was like the only thing people talked about when it came out.
Yeah. I feel like if you consider Dark Souls to be Demon Souls 2...
That's fair. The analog I was going to draw is Risk of Rain.
Okay.
And it's also similar because it made the jump from granted, Helldivers went top down to third person shooter. Risk of Rain went from 2D to third person shooter.
Aren't they going back though now?
I don't know.
I thought I saw that they're making now another Risk of Rain that's back to 2D, but I could be wrong. That's not at all like a type of game that appeals to me, so I don't know that much about it.
Risk of Rain 3D was too risky.
Risk of rasterization.
Yeah. Nice. Anything else about Helldivers 2?
No. I will try to be active in Slack and other channels, putting friend codes out there and finding people to play with.
Nice.
But I like the idea of getting a level squad going.
Yeah.
See how many Darrens we can kill.
Oh gosh, just a procession of Darrens. Yeah, do you have anything else, Dennis?
Nope, that's everything.
All right, Moxie, how about you? Anything besides Helldivers 2?
Yeah, so I picked up Pacific Drive.
Oh, sweet.
Oh, yeah.
Survival, weird, you know, just a stalker, but without being in Ukraine.
I think their whole goal is to make it confusing that people have to describe it as a survival horror game but not a survival horror game.
That's why I hesitated to say like, oh, it's a horror game, because it's more like surreal and like paranormal without being like outright, you know, scary. Like there are some robots that, you know, in the first bit that I played, there were some robots that would chase you, but mostly you were dealing with like physical anomalies, right? And then also the stress of getting to the jump gate at the end. Yeah,
right. Much more Roadside Picnic.
Yes.
Yeah, so that's kind of its vibe. It's I didn't play the demo. Did it have any like plot? You know, did you have any NPCs, anything like that?
The preview build that I played was like the first three missions or so. So like you get into the zone, you get the car, learn roughly like what kind of special object that is, a remnant or whatever, and you are introduced to the voices on the radio, like the crabby old woman who lets you use her garage, and then the two weirdos who are specifically interested in studying your car, the remnant, for its special properties. Gathering up the resources that I needed to attempt to make a long enough run to get over to whatever objective the two weirdos were guiding me toward. So it was like the first, it was like the opening like 2-3 hours of the game.
Sure. So that's the thing is, you know, it definitely is a, you know, plot based, big emphasis on figuring out what's going on with this world. In addition to, unlike most survival games where, you know, you're in an environment, you're building and you're, you know, chopping down things to like build up a, you know, base, that sort of thing. In this, your base is this garage and it's basically outside of the actual, you know, it's kind of a, almost like a, you know, level select, you know, kind of an intermission type of thing.
Yeah.
And so that makes it, almost reminds me of, have any of you played Against the Storm?
Yes, yeah.
It almost reminds me of that in that, you know, Against the Storm's kind of innovation was, what if we made a city builder where you only did the city building part? So, like, once the city is built, you're done and you do it again.
Yeah, like, you are, in that game, you're like, you're building up these small little colonies to meet a couple of particular goals, with the meta progression being resources go back to the city, and you're a viceroy who takes those resources and then goes out and builds colony after colony, getting right. further toward these broader objectives. In this one, like, the base, you're bringing mostly, like, resources back in order to repair the car, obviously, but also mm-hmm. to upgrade it and then like ship of Theseus into being, you know, a much better car than when you find it, but also unlocking capabilities at the garage.
Right. So in that respect, it's kind of a roguelike thing where you have, you know, these runs and these can be, you know, one of the things with it is the zone is constantly shifting.
Mm-hmm.
So, you don't, you know, you kind of chart out these runs. They can be, you know, multiple, I guess, quote unquote, level, you know, routes.
Yeah.
But then they'll always have, you know, various modifiers, that sort of thing. So in that respect, it's very much a roguelike.
Mm-hmm.
However, one of the things they kind of bring in that a lot of roguelites do not is the sort of, you know, kind of experimenting to learn the game mechanic, in that, you know, it's very explicit, like, at the start of the game, you don't know what any of the anomalies do. You'll see, you know, when you're selecting your route, you'll see icons for each of the modifiers, but there's no description of what the modifier does until you've experienced it at least once.
Another part of the meta is that you are scanning things in order right. to like assemble like a database of the threats that are out there.
Exactly. And with that, one of the interesting things is that when you scan them, you don't actually get a description of the item. You get a snippet of like a transmission log or a letter or something like that about you know, reporting back on the item,
kind of like an SCP kind of thing. Like, these are researchers making notes about this stuff when it shows up.
Right. So the big thing is they don't actually tell you explicitly what it does, or, you know, what potential counters might be. You have to kind of intuit that from the stuff they're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So in that respect, it almost reminds me of like a net hack, you know, figure out what these potions do, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
It's also interesting that, and you kind of alluded to this, your car is, like you said, very Ship of Theseus. It's pretty well established, particularly, or at least in the early stage, that often you won't be repairing things. You'll just, you know, once the wheels get damaged, you just pop them off and build some new ones.
Mm-hmm.
Am I intuiting correctly that the car is a proper noun? Like, it feels like you guys are using capital letters when you reference it.
It's basically like when you get it, it's a really rundown version of the family truckster from Vacation.
Very cool.
Yeah. And it is established that like there is something special about it.
It's like it's bound to you because you're the person who found it. Yeah.
Right. And like the, you know, since so the NPCs then refer to you simply as the driver.
Yes.
Nice. I do have to say, I'm not a huge fan of silent protagonists, which you are. However, at the very least, they at least justify it by saying the your car has a radio receiver but no transmitter.
Yes. I'm neutral on the silent protagonist. I think it can be used well and used poorly.
Yeah.
Well, what's important here is that I set the record straight for me.
Yes, exactly. that is true. So yeah, so you know, that's you know, really interesting. It's you know, a lot, at least this point, of just bumbling around. I don't know under the hood how much this is true.
Sorry, under the hood.
I see what you did there.
Yes. But it feels like it's a game that plays kind of fast and loose with damage, in that it, you know, each of your parts on your car, you know, have a HP that, you know, goes down. However, as I'm getting damage, that sort of thing, it feels much less like, oh, I'm getting hit and taking damage. That feels, then it's like, oh, I got hit and now I'm kind of worried. Is that wheel going to go out on me?
Yeah.
You know, it feels much more like what, you know, trying to hold a car together in this sort of situation would feel like.
Yeah, and it's pretty desperate if like a wheel goes out. Like, you can hobble away, but like when you're doing those big final escapes, you need to be relatively nimble, and healing yourself is much simpler than healing the car. Like,
right,
you just have to make bandages or the health kit or whatever. The car, you know, requires complicated resources and like multi-step you know, kind of crafting in order to get, right, the things that you need to hold it together. If you die, go ahead, sorry.
Oh, gone. No, gone.
I was going to say, if you die, you end up like the car will get you back to the garage, and it'll be damaged, you know, very damaged, obviously. You will lose most of what you had. However, something that I love, just like from a little detail, the friendly dumpster.
Yes.
I love the friendly dumpster. It's just a dumpster out back that regardless. So like in between missions, when you make a return back to the garage, the friendly dumpster will just kind of like cough out a bunch of items for you, you know?
and the tone of it is amazing, because like it is not a speaking character. It does not have a face. Like, this is an anomalous item.
Mm-hmm.
However, I don't know how much of that is just them insisting that it is, but it has the vibe of being somewhat benevolent. You know?
I mean, yeah. Well, and also the benevolence is not just that, like, hey, this is spitting up junk that, you know, is found from around the zone. It'll be more generous, including with some stuff that you dropped, if you come back after a death. So it is easier to get back up and going, because this is the kind of game when it's run based like this and your car has persistent health, where you could end up in kind of a death spiral. Right.
Right. The other thing that's I enjoy with that is that everyone refers to it as the friendly dumpster.
That's so great.
Like, including the like cranky old lady that's kind of the I only believe in science type of thing. Yeah. Lady.
you can't deny what it actually does, you know.
Right. Have you in your time playing, did you get any quirks?
Yeah, I found the diagnostic interface to be like a lot of the interface I found to be a little bit unwieldy, like figuring mm-hmm. out exactly what the like how the diagnosing worked, like specifically like the syntax of the sentence it was having you say, like, right, okay, when I back up, the hood flies open. Right.
Right. Yeah. So you'll basically get these bugs in your car that make just weird stuff happen,
mm-hmm.
but it happens in response to something you do.
Yes.
So like one of them, the main one I've had, and I guess I should say some of them are completely trivial. So like I had one whenever you close the trunk, the horn beeps.
Right, right.
Which I'm guessing eventually there'll be something where like I might care about stealth, but for the most part, that doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
However, I then had one where Whenever I shifted into park, which you want to do because your car will roll down a hill.
Oh, yeah. No, I went chasing after it many times.
The passenger door will open.
Which is a great way for it to be damaged if you speed off with it.
And even more importantly, your car will completely protect you from like radiation and stuff, but only if all the doors are closed.
Yep.
So that's again, there's a bunch of just weird stuff with this.
Mm-hmm.
The things I would say as a little bit of negative things. One, you cannot save during a run.
Right.
Once you start, you have to either complete it or just start over.
That's a wild thing for them to do in a single player only game.
Yeah, and apparently that was like a huge complaint, and the developer is adamant that that is an essential part of the experience.
Ooh, that feels like doubling down to me.
Yeah. So that is unfortunate.
I want to back up. Isn't that the same thing with like Dead Cells as well?
Yeah, but I mean, Dead Cells is roguelike and therefore innately a bad game. I'm joking. I think the difference to me, and this will kind of get into some of my other things, is the game is very exacting. You know, you very much have to, you know, be playing smart and conserving resources and avoiding problems, that sort of thing. It's also very clunky. Yeah. And individually, those are both features, because the game is set in like the 80s. So like, it's very much meant to be like a, early computer technology where things are sort of rickety. And both by the fact that it's roguelike and the fact that it's like a roadside picnic type game, it's supposed to be exacting. The problem is that gets really frustrating when, you know, you have to potentially repeatedly, like agonizingly work your way through, you know, fields of anomalies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The other
I have a question.
Yeah.
If you like in your run you die, do you lose your progress that you made during that, like the research that you did?
You lose some of it. So you lose some of your items. I don't know how that impacts like story progression. Mm-hmm. I assume you have to start over, but I don't know.
Okay.
But then the other thing is the game is extremely dark.
Visually.
Yeah, okay. Visually, yeah. At least, particularly initially, you don't have a flashlight. You just have, like, roadway flares that burn for, like, 15 seconds, something like that.
This was a real problem when I was streaming it.
Yeah. Yeah, so and that kind of gets into, I would say, my last complaint is at this point, and I'm assuming this is something that will, kind of alleviate as I'm going along. I feel like I often don't have intelligent solutions to the problems I'm facing. So, like, you know, it would be, I could see, you know, something like the forest where, it was very much definitely, dealing with darkness and making torches and stuff like that was a big part of the game.
Mm-hmm.
But it was also very explicitly set up. If you prioritize, you know, making sure you keep your supply of torches up and, you know, are harvesting and that sort of thing, then it's not a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas this, it feels like here's a, you know, difficulty in the game, and I don't seem to have an intelligent way to deal with it. Similarly, I haven't figured out there'll be places that are, you know, heavily irradiated, and right now it seems like I either just don't go to them or, well, basically just don't go to them.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and, you know, like I said, this is a game about figuring things out. It's a game about, you know, building up new resources. So I'm assuming it will, you know, it'll get more to, you know, giving you more tools and stuff.
You work your way up a tech tree, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Hmm.
So, yeah, so far I'm really enjoying it, you know, especially since, you know, Stalker is maybe my favorite game of all time. So mm-hmm. seeing more of that sort of, you know, exploration, you know, anomaly based gameplay, I'm definitely all about.
And something I was going to say earlier was like, I think it's important that this is more Roadside Picnic than it is Stalker. Roadside mm-hmm. Picnic yeah. being the book that the movie was based on. And then the game is a spiritual homage to. It's not an official yeah. adaptation. Yeah. Just yeah. because, like, you know, the fact that this is about exploration and making dives for valuable resources in this incredibly hostile place, that is, you know, to me a little bit more interesting than having it be so shooty, as good as, yeah. As Stalker is, you know?
Yeah.
You know, it is a neat little change of pace with this kind of idea to make it not shooty.
Yep.
To be fair, Stalker the movie didn't have very much shooting in it.
I was going to say that was why I very much tried to differentiate that the game was not a Stalker the movie didn't also have like a lot of resource gathering. It was mostly three people who represented very different philosophies arguing with each other. That mm-hmm. said, I love Stalker. It's a wonderful movie. I've got it on Blu-ray. Like, so.
Also, the best Stalker games don't have much shooting, at least with people.
Oh yeah,
but. But yeah, I do have to say I would kind of like to see some of these games learn that there's places in the world other than the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, it's a little heavily represented, I would say.
Coincidence that so many programmers live in the Pacific Northwest right. and games.
I would say not coincidence.
What you know.
yeah, anything else besides Helldivers 2 and Pacific Drive?
Nope, that's it.
Right. Ben, I want to hear from you.
Yeah, I just got two things, one old, one new. Old thing is Baldur's Gate. I'm still playing through my Bard run. I'm trying to start multi-classing. I'm almost done with Act 1. Mm-hmm. That's mostly just been like a wind-down sort of game, like if I have nothing to do in the evening.
Yeah,
I don't know. Game's so good.
Done with Act 1, really done with Act 1, or done with one of Act 1's many false starts or false stops? Yeah.
Well, I guess, yeah, that's a good point. So, part one of Act 1, I guess. So
with the resolving the druids stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And kind of what I've been trying to do with this is just like do the opposite choice of what I had done in previous runs, where it's like just try things I hadn't tried before. So for example, not immediately like trying to kill that hag and like trying to like talk to her or like use her as a healer. Mm-hmm. And then watching her take out a companion's eye and then they get hag vision for the game.
It's like, there are so many ways to lose your eye in this game. I love it.
Yeah. So just small things like that. Like one thing in this run too, is I found, like a piece of evidence on one side of the map that helps you resolve the goblin druid like conflict or whatever mm-hmm. in a certain way that I did not piece together the first time. So
are
I was
you
like, oh.
talking about the shadow druids stuff?
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How much of a pain in the ass is that battle on that island with the woodwodes and the mud mephits?
That goes to another thing where I just turned the difficulty down to the okay. easiest setting because yeah, okay. it's like, I'm here to play the game. I'm not trying to do a combat thing.
Okay.
I'm trying to talk people into things. So yeah, this See, is
my experience with that battle was that got to the edge of the AI's intelligence. Like, all right, I'm cheesing this and I know I'm cheesing it, but,
yeah,
whatever yeah. works.
And then, interestingly enough, I'm, like, really flippant about killing companions that would be with you, like, the entire time, where it's, like, Asterion, I tried to stab him when he tried to drink my blood, and okay. so he just left, and he's gone. I'm like, okay. Right. Gale, when he reached his hand through the portal, I was like, no, I'm not going to reach in there. I don't want, that's too risky. And he's just like, aw. And then that's the last I've heard of him. So it's like, oh, yeah. Well, sorry. And then I killed Karlach.
What? Oh,
good. Ooh. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah.
Didn't know you were a bad person.
I wanted to see Will's storyline when he doesn't get turned into a demon. So
right.
that was kind of the rationale.
Okay. He got turned into a devil. There's a very big difference.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. My bad.
Sorry.
You'd know there was a big difference if Karlach was around to explain it.
Yeah. So it's been fun, like, kind of peeling at the edges there and, like, seeing the parts that I hadn't seen before. That game is good. A surprising conclusion, huh? but yeah, that is still a nice, like, wind down game. And then I think I mentioned I'm starting to do, like, the multi-classing where I'm trying to, like, kind of split some of the classes to see what that's like. Mm-hmm. Ironically enough, you have to change the difficulty up to normal to do that, and then you can change it back down. It's no
problem. Okay, I didn't know about the changing it back down. I was going to bring that up, that multi-classing which is a wild decision to me. What a weird thing to block based on difficulty. But
yeah, I mean, I guess I can understand where they're coming from with it. And since you can get around it easily enough, I guess it's fine.
Yeah,
I think that might be better than like somebody playing on easy and then accidentally screwing themselves over, being like, I want one level of each, and then mm-hmm. being hosed the rest of the game.
Yeah.
But anyway, the other game that I want to talk about is something new that I picked up, but it came out a little bit ago. It's a game called The Invincible. This is an indie game. I forget where the publishers are from. I think they're in Eastern Europe, maybe. It might be Poland even, but I could be confusing that because this is a game that's based on a science fiction novel. Yeah.
The hard sci-fi.
Yeah, and it's was it Stanislav Lev? What else did he did Solaris and some other stuff. He's a Polish science fiction writer from the mid 1900s. So he has like a good body of sci-fi work behind him. And I ended up reading The Invincible because I had seen this game in passing and saw that it was based on the novel. Mm-hmm. And enjoyed the novel well enough. It has like a really cool kind of like retro sci-fi approach to it where there's like things that are obviously don't really make sense now, I guess, with more like information about how things work, but it's still like cool and like at least it feels like really cool. Because it's like retro futurism, a lot of it. And uh-huh. like a lot of the book is kind of based on like the idea of like human cooperation and like, you know, this kind of like almost like an evolved form of
so it's a fantasy.
Yeah, they did that phi part, huh? But it's like you know, that's like a lot. Like it's half of like that of like how this like scientific team is studying a planet, and the other half is like the planet itself and kind of the interesting things about that. So anyway, all that to say is that the book's pretty interesting and is a pretty good read. And so I was curious to try the game, even though it, you know, hasn't had the highest of reviews or kind of mixed reviews. And I've only played a little bit of it. I've only played a couple hours so far. But what I'll say is that I'm enjoying the game. I wouldn't necessarily recommend the game for people if they're not looking for this very specific thing. The game itself is kind of like a walking simulator. It's not based directly on the book. It's based like... it's different characters, but it's still the same planet, mm-hmm. seems to be the main thing. And it's pretty much so far, it's like a walking simulator, and it's loosely following like the similar like discoveries that you have in the book, like through these characters. Like they're kind of following the same path or the same arc. But outside of that, I can see why this would not be like highly reviewed because it is very like slow moving. It is kind of a little bit rough around the edges where like small things where it's like you having to climb up and climb down rocks that don't seem to be justifiable that you would need a complete animation to step up or step down or something like that.
And it's not like mechanical climbing. It's not doing like a Death Stranding kind of thing. It's like, okay, this is
a cutscene.
Yeah.
Yeah, that kind of takes a little bit too long, and yeah. And you can tell, like, that's where they're, you know, like, loading and unloading things or whatever to make the game work. But mechanics aside, vibe check passes pretty well. Like it looks beautiful. I think it's in the Unreal Engine. But there's like cool things they do with the lighting, where it's like when you like walking beneath a canyon where you have this like red sun behind it, and like the how the lighting works, and like walking into a cave and having that look like really dramatic. Mm-hmm. Like so that part's great, and like the science fiction aspect of it and like the narrative aspect of it seems pretty good. Mm-hmm. Just small things too, like the backpack you're wearing, like you literally interact with every compartment of it to see it like fully to see all the innards and stuff like that, and it's just like reinforcing the retro futurism aesthetic, and like so that part's all cool, and so I enjoy that part. But yeah, so it's, I don't know. But if you're not into walking simulators, and if you're not into like a little bit of clunkiness, probably isn't the game for you. But yeah. But yeah, so far so good from my experience with it, I guess.
The way that I would describe this kind of game is it's like a short little tourist pass to a book or to, you know, a fictional world, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
It is just like, hey, here's a slice of like a story and you being in this. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah. And I'll be curious to see how they present kind of like the there's a twist in the book and there's a conclusion of the book, and I'll be curious to see how those are represented here, I guess. Yeah. Anyway. Interesting indie game that's out. So
nice. The Invincible.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. I have a couple. So the big one that I have done that I have the most to say about, because I've finished it, is Home Safety Hotline. This is a game that I streamed over the weekend, and wow, is this kind of like a little like homing missile right to my heart. in that it's got a bunch of things working for it. It is like an old computer simulator, kind mm-hmm. of like Hypnospace Outlaw. It's a little bit of a detective-y kind of a game, in a way that I will describe. But most of all, what this is a big bestiary, like reference book that you have to read and then internalize, so you can solve the problems of the game. So what this is, it takes place in 1996. You are somebody who just got hired in for a job to work at the Home Safety Hotline, which is a service, semi-governmental agency that people can call when things are going wrong with their house, problems that they need solved. You know, things like, you know, pest problems, you know, you get like bed bugs or whatever, things like, you know, disasters, here's a flood, or here's like frozen pipes, or, you know, say you don't wash your bed sheets for a while and they start growing teeth, and it starts irritating your skin. You got bed teeth. You got to call somebody to help you figure out what's going on, 'cause you might not have seen bed teeth before. Maybe you notice that, you hear some noises at night and you go out and nobody's stolen anything, but stuff is suddenly cleaned up. Well, you got a hob, and you got to make sure that you leave stuff out for the hob, so it doesn't metamorphose and turn into a much bigger problem, for you. So it's kind of working in this, SCP, you know, style thing, where the entirety of the game is people will call. They'll describe the problem that they are experiencing, and then what you have to do is identify what it is that they're going up against, right? And then you select that, and then at the end of each day, you're graded on your accuracy based on it. You'll know when you get stuff wrong because people will call back.
I thought you were going to say because people will die.
Well, you know, but...
calling back is probably the better course for some of these.
Yes. Yeah. And so when I say it's just a bestiary, there's got to be like 50, 60 little entries, each with photos, each with sometimes audio samples for you to listen to, you know, to help identify what they're talking about. And it's like having just like this little monster manual, which I love monster manuals. We did a whole podcast about that. you know,
a lot of hob entries.
Many hobs. There are lots of different kinds of hobs. You got your fracture hobs, you got your pipe hobs, you know, and don't even get me into the sprites or the different kinds of gnomes that you can get.
bestiary.
Yeah, it's Hob against Hob.
Cool. Have you considered you might have wall hobs, and that's why the cats are climbing the walls?
It's possible. God, it's possible I might have wall hobs. Also, it's up in the attic, so it might be attic gnomes. Which is mostly a benign problem unless you have really bad allergies. But my allergies are mostly seasonal, so that's okay. they complicate this, so you get your bestiary expands, you know, your reference material expands every day, so you have to read, you know, new entries as they come in. And then after like the second day, the network starts going out, so you know you've got somebody on the line and you can't like go and look at the entry to see if it's, you know, like, okay, double check that the details line up. It is doing a pop quiz on you to see how much you noticed, right? Like, okay, well, if the pipe is creating a bad smell, it's got to be this, but if the pipe is getting clogged, it's this, you know, different kinds of things. That, and it's mixing in mundane things with supernatural things. So, you know, for any of this, it might be a possibility that you might need to use the carbon monoxide leak entry, you know, but like, just because they add something doesn't mean that the calls that you're getting are coming from that new cache of stuff that was added throughout the game. You're calling back to, you know, things that are added as it goes. So like, what I'm describing is going to sound painfully boring to a bunch of people because it's literally read a text and then be progressively quizzed on it as it gets broader. But the flavor is really good. The voice acting on the people who are calling is fantastic. Sometimes altered people call, and it is really upsetting and unnerving. you know,
explain.
Just like somebody will call and like the little digitized portrait is all messed up. It's like a little collage of different things, and they're talking about, and the things they're saying aren't making sense, and they don't quite have human names.
The bed teeth are the ones calling.
Yeah.
Oof. Hey, I think I got bed teeth. I need someone to come lie in them.
Go ahead, Moxie.
So I think my favorite part of this, and this is maybe a little bit of a spoiler, is once they start testing you.
Yeah, that is a little bit of a spoiler. I don't want to ruin that for somebody who gets that far. This is like a 3.5-4 hour game, and I would very much recommend, if this sounds like your kind of shit, definitely play it, and be ready for some curveballs. Let's say, using the interface and the way that it is quizzing you. Yeah. Yeah, didn't mean to cut you off in your tracks there, but that is really cool what they do in the final day.
Yeah. In particular with the
more mundane entries.
Yes.
I love it. It is such a cute little game. It feels like a game jam kind of thing. Oh, something else. When you finish it, it unlocks on the little fake desktop that you have a document, which is like a little art book for the game, but is also like the designer saying, hey, here was like the different stages that this went through, and like showing scans of their notebook, like, oh, back when the pandemic began, I had this idea for a game called 1-800-BESTIARY, and then showing like the little doodles that they did, you know, to come up with that. And then like it's like 30 slides of them walking through the entire creation. I love that. Like it would be really hard to do like an audio commentary on this game given the way that it's laid out, but like more games, I would like if more games did that, because I'm intensely interested in that kind of stuff. So
one of the things that you know, just when I was watching a stream that I thought was particularly cool about that is, you know, you have this little image for each of the, you know, maladies you can diagnose.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them kind of only work because it's this ultra lo-fi computer aesthetic.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's, you know, will be a picture of some sort of, you know, kind of weird monster creature. But like, you know, this is like early internet era, so it's super low res, that sort of thing.
Super low res, super compressed. Like, they are taking advantage in the way that all lo-fi horror does of the limits of the fidelity of what's there. And it's real fun to see, like, just the actual raw photoshops before they
That's
were digitized.
What I was gonna say. Yeah,
you know, a little bar of soap with tentacles sticking out. You know? But like just small tentacles, not big tentacles, but like just enough to be like, okay, is that like just like a little bit of soap running off, or is this a creature that is feeding off of my skin cells and bacteria and making me sick? Oh, oh gosh, the fiction in it is so fucking good. I love this game. I think Home Safety Hotline is a very good game. Are there any more questions about it?
No, it looked cool. It's similar to, was it Home Sweet Home or whatever? Or like the X-Files aesthetic kind of.
Yeah, yeah. X-Files, Hypnospace is definitely playing in X-Files SCP kind of territory. Yeah.
I know there's another one. I forget what it's called. It's like you're like a night watchman, and it's almost a those whole what's different between those two images.
Yeah, it's a whole series of like security camera before and afters, spot the difference kind of things. Yeah, I forget what they're called, but I know what you're talking about.
Yeah,
yeah. Any questions about that before I move on to my next one?
When do you think you can come over and lie in my bed, Teeth?
Sorry, I'm gonna have to wait till your bed teeth are done with you, because they get real upset if you try and change up the task on the midstream.
Sounds good. Sounds good.
Yeah. The other thing I've been playing that I don't want to go into with great detail, because this episode's running a little bit long, but Yakuza 0, I'm having fun with that. Real good, you know, beat 'em up gameplay. I love the kind of the main story that you are doing relating to a murder that has been pinned on you that is related to this inter-family dispute over a very tiny empty lot in this crowded kind of ward of Japan, this Kamurocho kind of like a pleasure district kind of place. Digging the way that the different combat stances work on you, and then obviously doing the side quests. I helped a group of dweebs who are being promoted as a punk rock act. I taught them how to act like real hard gangster punk kind of folks before a Q&A they did, you know. So just like with one of them, you know, just like, okay, just they want me to describe my, you know, my agent wants me to describe what my day is, and you say don't talk at all. Like it's presented as like another little quiz. It's a big quiz week for me, but it's like, you know, options for the suggestions that you can give him as a real, you know, organized crime guy. And it's like, no, you don't talk. Like you're breaking the rules by not talking. So like they're gonna think that's awesome. Hey, you, when you greet them in English. They're gonna fucking love that. I also there was a little boy who was waiting in line for Dragon Quest III. Nice. You know, all you know, he saved up all of his allowance, after he bought it, a high school kid stole it from him. So he chased down and beat up the high school kid to find out that somebody stole it from him. And then it goes three or four more times until you find out the kid's dad was the one who stole it from the last person trying to steal it for his kid. So it's like a gift of the mad guy kind of thing.
Just with way more black eyes.
Is this set like back in the day then? Because Dragon Quest III was like when we were what, middle school?
I mean the GameCube or the Game Boy One, the Game Boy Color One was when we were in middle school. This set in the 80s. I think it's like 1985, 1986, something like that. It's 10 years before the first Yakuza, which was itself a period piece. Yeah. So this is 80s Japan. Yeah. It's good. I'm going to continue gathering it, but like it is a wonderful little like life sim short story collection kind of thing that is married to a very dense and interesting crime drama. Yeah.
Very cool.
And I don't have very much to say about this other one, because my Rock Band drum set is slowly more and more of it's being held together with gaffer's tape, as it's falling apart as I use it, I decided to dip my toe into Clone Hero a little bit. Clone Hero being an open source fan project that is just, what if Guitar Hero, but also it was free and you could download it. And also there are a bunch of unofficial databases where you can download songs to play in it, many of which are songs from the games or DLC that have the same tracks. So basically pirate Guitar Hero Rock Band kind of thing for PC.
And then, do they have a way to open source, like, making instruments so that you don't have to have gaffer's tape?
No, they don't have that. But what you can do is drive to Columbus to a guitar center, which is running a sale on, like, the commonly accepted, hey, this is the good, like, Clone Hero e-drum kit, the Alesis Nitro Max. Yeah. And so I got that yesterday. No, sorry. I got that on Sunday. No, I got it on Monday. I got it yesterday. It's not important. I got that and put it together and messed around with that. And boy, that is cool.
So that's like an electronic drum kit that you're using.
Oh yes, my gosh. It's an electronic drum kit that I put together and just played around with for a while before I even, hooked it up to Clone Hero. Yeah.
That's dope.
Yeah. Yeah. So, been playing around with that, and it's not just games that are, you know, it's not just songs that were already available for the games that you can download. And I was like, all right, let me just check these databases and see what they have by way of, you know, fan-made little things. And I got like a couple of Eels songs to play the drums to. I got the title theme from Silent Hill 2, Theme of Laura, to play with that.
Oh, huh.
Yeah. So you can get a bunch of weird stuff like that. And I'm looking forward to really fucking around, as maybe I need to give my Rock Band 3 drum set a bit of a Viking funeral. Yeah.
Now that I want to see.
I mean, the nearest body of water to me is not necessarily that impressive, and I think I would immediately be arrested for setting something on fire in a public park. So
there's actually a whole thing for that. What you'd have to do is you set it on fire, and then you have to immediately call the Coast Guard.
Okay.
Because, well, this is if you want to do an actual Viking funeral.
Okay.
Because you don't want to get caught, you know, with like, hey, I had a body and now I don't. The authorities tend to look down upon that.
Right.
But they don't care that much if you, you know, if just like, oh, there was a boat accident and some dinghy's gonna go down.
Okay, so in this, it needs to be like it. Are you talking about a way to dispose a body without anybody asking questions? Do I need to bleep this?
I have a friend who's Asatru who wanted a Viking funeral when they die. So I looked into
looked into the practicalities. Okay, so like
and the point is, you cannot do it legally. There are ways you could likely get away with it.
Okay, what if it didn't involve a human body and it was just some plastic that I bought in 2010 to replace other plastic that I bought in 2007?
I mean, aren't those your babies?
A cool? Really, really big origami boat.
Okay. Huh. Yeah, what I don't want to do is like just shove that off into Clear Fork or East Harbor up on Lake Erie and then just just be Grand Theft Auto busted kind of thing. Yeah.
Stars appear.
up there, can't you just say you're doing it to own the libs and everyone kind of turn a blind eye?
No, if it's up by Lake Erie, that's a little bit of a bluer area. And if it's Clear Fork, people actually care about that around here.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Oh, well, any questions about Clone Hero or me committing wild music piracy and buying professional, or at least prosumer musical equipment?
I'll come visit you in prison.
Okay, cool.
Now that you've admitted to it on recording.
Okay, cool.
multiplayer.
Now it's time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Dennis, what is the question that you asked the nice people?
Yeah, I wanted to reflect on our gaming tastes over time. You know, how have those tastes evolved? And are there things that you've grown into or grown out of?
Yeah. I'll get started with Jeremy, who says, when I was younger, I would play Halo for hours and hours. But now I can't even play a shooter unless it's a really imaginative and co-op one. Now I mostly play indie games, and my attention span for games is way down if it's not something special. Being an adult with responsibilities, a wife and kids, I guess my me time needs to be worth it.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough.
Yeah, I think that's relatable. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's see. Moxie, what does Sean say?
Sean says, I think as I've grown older, I've found that I'll play a much wider variety of games. I have, however, stopped playing multiplayer games like Destiny or Call of Duty since having kids, as I have had sufficient time to dedicate to a game in that genre to be good at it. This has helped me play many more games rather than being drawn back and sinking hours into one or a couple of multiplayer games.
Yeah, that makes sense. Getting a little bit more variety, not playing as many forever games. Yeah.
I think that's probably why you've seen the rise of co-op as such a popular convention, is it's a way to do multiplayer where you don't have to be at the peak of your game.
Yeah. Makes sense to me. Ben, what does Callum say?
Callum says, really, my main change is I don't really play multiplayer games anymore. I used to play a mix of single player and multiplayer, and the multiplayer games just stopped over time.
Yeah, this is two answers that are completely alien to my experience because I never had the multiplayer game bug.
Huh.
Yeah.
I mean, we did a fair amount of Halo.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I guess that was back in the day. I guess I draw a distinction between gathering together for a LAN party thing like that, like we did in high school. Yeah. And online, like I can just like tap into this at any given time kind of thing.
Yeah, that's reasonable. That makes sense.
Yeah. Dennis, how have your tastes changed?
Yeah, the one thing that I feel like I've grown away from is conventionally story heavy games, I guess.
Right.
Like I don't want to watch a cutscene. If I want to watch a movie, I'll watch a movie. If I'm playing a game, I want it to be doing something interesting on the interactive front. And so, you know, lots of games that have probably, you know, perfectly good stories, but are relaying those stories in a ton of cutscenes and, you know, milquetoast, go down this corridor and watch another cutscene kind of format. I've lost all patience for. Yeah. And that's had me drift towards games that, you know, I feel like they've got a lot less narrative on the surface, either, you know, if it's a roguelite or what have you. But I think there are still games that tell an interesting story in a more atmospheric way.
Yeah.
That I can absorb while I'm playing. And I like that a lot better now. Whereas before, you know, I'd eat up cutscenes and anything in video game format story wise.
Mm-hmm. That echoes my experience specifically. You know, you'll hear me talk about games as being talky. As a negative, and it's not necessarily the case, right? Like I love Disco Elysium. That's a game that's a book, right? Mm-hmm. It's a book with die rolls. I talked about Yakuza Zero. There's lots of talking that happens in that game, like classic, you know, kind of console RPG, you know, the dialogue stuff in addition to the cutscenes that are there. But like if a game feels like it is long-winded to very little purpose, if it is not using the opportunity for text in what seems like an especially valuable way, it will like just mulch through my patience.
Yes.
Yeah. So a little bit more discerning about that. Whereas like, I don't know, if I was playing anything, I would like go around and inspect every object and talk to every person just to see what text was there. I'm a little bit less omnivorous for that now. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if there's like some kind of uncanny valley where, cause I think of like, I think it was Final Fantasy IX maybe, or maybe Final Fantasy VI. Where like, you know, lots of story to it, but I ate it up, and that was so lo-fi graphically that you were like filling in a lot of the blanks. And I feel like narratives in games have gotten more detailed, closer to a CGI movie, but that's taken away the ability for me to fill in the blanks in a way that I like.
The switch to voice acted stuff is a real problem.
Yes.
In terms of, you know, listening to a line or even skipping through a line takes more time than, you know, reading it. You know, if you're just, you know, scanning it and getting the meaning and then going on. For me, the scales really, really fell off of my eyes with Dark Souls. And seeing that, you know, so much information could be conveyed in text that otherwise would be entirely optional, right? You know, it's just like, well, okay, like these NPCs have like three lines of dialogue a piece probably every time you talk to them. That's enough. Like, it's still really cool and impactful. Like other games, why are you doing less with more?
Exactly.
Yeah. Moxie, how about you?
So, two things. I feel like I'm in some ways kind of the opposite to what a lot of people are saying, in that I tend to play in some ways more live service-y games, because for me, I'm playing games often as a way to de-stress. So like, I usually don't like, I really want to play Disco Elysium. It sounds like something I'd love, except that I don't have the energy to make decisions.
Right.
The other thing, and I'm going to kind of zig on this to, I've been watching a lot of anime recently, and the two things I'm noticing as I get older are, one, just watching, like, you know, the training montages and, you know, the fights and stuff like that, and just cringing at like how hard everyone is on their bodies. Okay. And just like, yeah, no, that's not going to work. You're going to be crippled by the time you're 30.
Yeah, you're not Goku, bud.
And then also just realizing how many, I think particularly anime, but probably a lot of stories could be resolved by even just the bare minimal effort at like mental health care.
Yeah, no.
Like, you know, watching like Evangelion, it's like,
okay, you cannot apply therapy to Evangelion. Come on.
I'm just saying, just the fact that it's like, the fact that no one cares that any of the, that all of the characters are overtly suicidal.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, no one would at least be like,
it makes them better at their jobs somehow.
Yeah. But yeah, just watch all these things that it's like, yeah, any, this could have been resolved with just like an hour of therapy.
Yeah. Oh gosh.
It's the anime equivalent of this could have been an email.
People with devils in the place their hearts would rather pledge themselves into the service of a morally dubious woman in her organization rather than do even a minute of therapy.
Yep.
Ben, how about you?
Man, I got sidetracked that I don't even, I forget what my answer was. Oh, yes. All right. I'm sticking too far into anime. Two things. One is I don't have like the time to go deep into like shooter games anymore, because I did that a lot like in high school with like Medal of Honor and Halo and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I don't really do that anymore, or like I don't really want to do that anymore either, just because it's like, it's just so much time. So anyway, the other one is just being more picky about what I play. Whereas like, since you have a longer like history of, or library of games that you've played, like feeling less of an urge to play something that just feels samey as something else. Like an example I'll give is like the new Prince of Persia game, even though it looks great, it's like, I feel like I've played all those individual components before. So I'm not really interested in going through that again.
Mm-hmm.
So,
you know. Yeah. I can see it. Yeah. Well, that sounds like a multiplayer to me. Thank you everybody for responding. Thank you for your answers. If you would like to participate in these in the future, go to the Duckfeed community group on Facebook and watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons. And thank you, Dennis, for posting this.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us, and how we feel about them.
Nothing happened. Everything is fine.
Everything is fine. Don't look closely. Okay.
Nothing to see here. Yeah.
I'm seeing in the Slack that we don't have total bummers. It feels bad to at least not acknowledge the layoffs that just happened today. By today, I mean Tuesday, February the 27th. On the day this comes out, on March the 1st, or maybe entirely more. Today is the day that 900 people were laid off across Sony's PlayStation studios, including the closure of the London studio. This is in addition to the story that I initially picked, which is 20% of the staff at Deck 9 Games. The developer who worked on Life is Strange Before the Storm and Life is Strange True Colors, they just laid off 20% of their staff. The Sony layoffs affected a bunch of, like, I would say should be very successful studios: Insomnia, Naughty Dog, Supermassive. This is a real problem. This is going to cost not just these individual people. No, I'm going to reverse that. It's going to cost us, but, you know, good games in the future as these studios lose, institutional knowledge as they churn through people. But also this is, executives monkeying around for stock price based bonuses at the expense of literal human lives. It fucking sucks, and I hate it, and it's happening so often. I believe we're pretty close to, if not already eclipsing, the layoff total from 2023, and it's only the end of February.
Yeah, and the worst part is you hear analysts be like, well, at this point it's reflexive. It's like lemmings who, you know, see another studio doing layoffs and are like, oh, should we be laying off? And then it just kind of cascades. So
it's really bleak. And I forget who it was on Twitter who said something like this. I really should have made a note of it and cited it, because it is a very good point. But specifically with Sony, Microsoft, any of these very large studios that are cutting, we seem to be very much in the AAA space specifically, but this has knock-on effects for indies as well, in this place where, like, companies are not too big to fail, they're too big to succeed. Like, Marvel Spider-Man 2 is the fastest selling Sony first party game that they've put together. Huge success. Not successful enough for them to consider it a quote success. Not successful enough to save the jobs of the people at Insomniac. Which is wild to me that is where we're at. So
do you know, how does this interact with, I hear the stories a lot of, like, you know, a game ships and it's like, all right, all the QAs fired, or I don't know if QA, you know, those sorts of things. Like, I hear a lot of stories that make it sound like a lot of game development is almost like a gig economy thing.
Yeah.
Is this layoffs on top of that?
Yes, it's layoffs on top of that. This is like unannounced projects that are being canceled, is primarily what this is. It's a switch to the Hollywood model, which is we hire up for the production of this film and then cut everybody loose. Everybody is to some degree itinerant, which is terrible and stands in contrast to what you see specifically from Japanese studios. There are a lot of ways in which the Japanese work environment is also just a fucking meat grinder and should be addressed and is, you know, tearing through people. What you can say, though, is that, like, a lot of the people who worked on Super Mario Wonder worked on, like, Super Mario World. They've been there for a very, very long time. When asked, you know, in this recent round of interviews about, Elden Ring and FromSoft success, leaders at that studio have said, like, yeah, like, a huge part of this is retention. right? Like, we have, you know, when we start up something new, it's not getting everybody up to speed on like what our shared goals are, what our shared methods of communication are, all of this like existential overhead that comes from being a professional in this industry. It's just, all right, same people roughly, let's start working on this. And you see it. You see it in the legacy of these different studios. And it is a real shame that, you know, just there is zero security. Like, this is the tide receding in a way that, like, people who are cut out from this in this huge contraction, they're probably never going to work in games again. And why would they want to? Because there's no security in it. They're already taking a huge pay cut and a huge job security cut just to work in a cool field of, you know, software development, right?
Yeah.
Sorry, I am going on too long about it. It sucks. No, I mean,
it's not like it won't be relevant when this publishes.
Yeah, so that's the depressing story. Do we have anything about that before we get to the non-depressing offerings that people have?
Just be kind to people in the industry.
Like, yes.
Reading other recent headlines, maybe now is not the time to get all angry about servers or et cetera.
Yeah, probably. Hey Ben, what's going on with Larian and Baldur's Gate?
Yeah, I'll try and say the story and the story behind the story on this one. The story is that they tweeted out that they're gonna add modding support later in the year, or that was one of their main priorities of what they're working on for Baldur's Gate 3. Mm-hmm. Kind of the story behind this though is that their latest patch broke a bunch of mods, so that's why people are kind of upset about it. And so
they're kind of the smooches were too powerful.
So that's the idea, but what gets me excited about it is that means like maybe there's some sort of way that this could make mods come to consoles, and I would be completely down with that. So but yeah, that would involve like maybe them making some sort of tool in game to be able to download mods on. So
there's precedent for it. Fallout 4 had mods that were available on the console versions, and even Larian, a lot of popular quality of life mods for the Divinity Original Sin games, I only know it specifically from 2, but I know it happened in 1 as well, ended up becoming like secret options in the console versions of those games. You know, things related to like inventory interface and you know, various things. So like, yeah, they like the track is laid for this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So cool. It could possibly get even better, the game. So we'll see.
Mods are only good. There are bad mods, right? But a mod, you know, the you know, a modding environment can only be good for the overall product, right?
Yeah,
and for everybody, yeah. Dennis, what's happening with Fortnite?
Yeah, so Fortnite is continuing its quest to be the everything platform. But of specific interest, they're at least doing it through Lego, which is delightful.
Yes.
They are launching 2 new Lego games via Fortnite. Previously, it was just I think it was called Lego Fortnite, and the survival game, which was, you know, by all accounts, pretty good. Mm-hmm. They're now doing a pirate-themed raft survival game.
So literally just taking the raft and building it into Fortnite?
Lego Raft Survival. Yeah, I guess so. It's got a Lego veneer. Well, I guess this seems a little more puzzle oriented, maybe, that you're specifically trying to maintain the raft while a pirate ship is firing at you.
Gotcha. Okay.
So it's got a less of a kind of floating on the high seas vibe and more of a almost like a party game vibe.
Yeah.
And that's for me looking at pictures versus seeing it in action.
Right.
So yeah, wouldn't expect anything quite at the level of the raft. The other one though is interesting. It's called Lego Obby. I had never heard the term
Lego Obby.
Obby before. Yes, Lego Obby.
OBBY.
OBBY. Had anyone else here heard that term?
No.
No. Nope.
Okay, apparently this is a very direct shot across the bow of Roblox. Apparently Obby games in Roblox are obstacle courses.
Okay.
Platforming levels.
Well, they could really actually just say that. It doesn't have to be a dumb name. Sorry. I'll let you go.
But I mean, you know, they're going
they're for kids,
going after the kids. That, you know, it's Lego obstacle course levels, all with different themes, all Lego-fied. And yeah, this just feels like a very overt. We are trying to get in on Roblox's territory, kind of play. So we'll see. I'm happy to have more things to do in that client with my kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they can go to the same old, I think it's called Crazy Red versus Blue level again and again and again, never get tired of it. I can. So new stuff to do with them is always good.
Yeah.
And we'll see how this fares. It's nice to have it in kind of a curated platform, that, you know, you're not having to buy an additional game every time or download something different every time they put something out. I'm not sure how I feel about this, like, a game is becoming a hub for everything.
I feel very badly about it. I do not like it at all, but
it's weird. Yeah. I don't know how far reaching it's going to go. Starting with all of a sudden Lego feels like a pretty far reach to begin with. So
yeah,
we shall see. But you know, the stuff coming looks cool. I'll check it out with my kids and report back.
Raft one seems fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Moxie, you got a story?
Nope.
There you go. All right.
Trying to keep it positive.
Saying nothing at all. How do you all feel about buttoning it up?
Buttons.
The credit. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening to level number 491. We really appreciate you taking the time. If you would like to help us out, you can go to patreon.com/duckfeedtv. Support the network, not just the show, but all the shows we do. Leave a rating or review for the level on whatever podcast directory you happen to be getting it from. Apple, Spotify, Podcast Addict, it's all there. And tell your friends, you know, spread the word. That's how we grow. We don't advertise or anything like that. Dennis, do you have anything to promote?
Promote, yeah. I will be at Origins. I think that's, I could give specific dates here, but you know, if you're going to Origins, I'll be there.
Yeah.
And I will be at Gen Con as well, but Origins is the next big one coming up. So come see Deck of Wonders at Origins.
Nice. Cool. Well, no sense prolonging this. I've been Cole Ross. You can find me on Blue Sky at Cole Ross.
I've been Dennis Furia, and I'm going to prolong this just because I can now, and it was called out. So it's been wonderful chatting with you all tonight. And you can find me, should you feel so inclined, over at Blue Sky at Furia Games.
Okay.
I've been Moxie. You can find me Hell Diving.
And I've been Ben Miracle.
And stick around for some titles. I only have one. I have The Smooches Were Too Powerful.
That's the only one I have.
That's pretty good.
Okay. Dennis, what you got?
I had four. I don't know if any of them can eclipse Smooches there. The first one is just Darren.
Okay.
Next is The Friendly Dumpster.
Okay.
Written down before I knew that was kind of the proper name in game versus right. a fun way of describing it. So Many Ways to Lose Your Eye. And then finally, Many Hops.
And Ben.
I just have, I'll take Worms or Dragons.
Seems like Smooches takes it.
I like Smooches.
All right. It is decided.